Yeah, another highlight of the almost completed 2016 Montreal Jazz Fest. Shane Murphy and his band on stage at the Blue Stage a week ago Sunday. Welcome back. Hour number three, Melnick in the afternoon, TSN 690. Welcome to the weekend, along with Rod Francis and Mitch Gallo. Tom Tebbett at Wimbledon in less than half an hour. Noel Butler will preview the Euro 16 title game before 6 o'clock. Don't forget, on Sunday, we have the final for you from the All England Tennis Club at 9 o'clock Sunday morning, live coverage right here on TSN 690. And we will have live coverage of Euro 16 as well, beginning with Connor and Noel, Butler and McKenna, broadcasting live from the Old Orchard downtown. Pre-match at 2, game underway at 3, post-match as well. It's all coming down this Sunday. A week ago or so, Gord Miller ended up trending on Twitter in Montreal because of...
There's 230 defensemen in the NHL, roughly, you know, give or take. And PK is probably in that range of 15 to 20.
But 15 to 20?
For most hockey people, he's not in the top dozen defensemen in the NHL.
Where would you put Subban?
Top five, maybe top three.
That is Scott Cullen, who is part of the analytics show on TSN Radio through the course of the season. He was with us about an hour ago. It's once again time to welcome back Mr. Gord Miller from Calgary, Alberta, this afternoon. How are you?
I'm very well, sir.
All right. So, you know, how was your week?
Great. Had a very good week. I must say, between Wimbledon and Euro, I got almost nothing accomplished during the day.
Yeah. No, you're not shifting focus here. We'll get around to that, but let's pick up where we left.
How was my week in regards to PK Subban?
Yeah,
it didn't really have an impact on my week, to be perfectly honest.
Oh shucks, come on.
Sorry.
But Gord, you were trending in Montreal.
Well, I see. I don't read the mentions on Twitter, right? So I don't see them. So I'm not really aware of what people are saying. I'm sure people were upset. Some were upset, and I'm sure some agreed and some disagreed. That's fine. And I think the thing is that I think PK Subban's a really good defenseman, and I think he's a great guy to boot. But all I was saying, and it's funny the reaction I've had from some hockey people, I talked to them about it, and yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people in the game that just don't think he's in that absolute top level of defenseman. Now, if he's in the top 20 in the NHL, that's a really good player.
Yeah, but not as good as he really is, though. And I think we'll see in Nashville what happens.
Yeah, and I think he'll have a great time. He'll play very well in Nashville. Roman Josi, who's probably going to be his partner there, is a very good defenseman. One coach said to me, speaking to him this week, said, PK Subban does three things at an absolute world-class level, and he's awful at two others. So the question is, can you live with the thing that, in his mind, he's awful at?
Well, what is he awful at?
He takes a lot of minor penalties.
Okay, that's fair. Absolutely fair. Yeah.
Gets goaded into minor penalties.
Yep.
Some of them are, now, I didn't look this up, but in his mind, he gets a lot of restraining fouls, so hooking, tripping, holding, and he gets beaten. And secondly, decision-making, pinching at the wrong time, you know, looking for the big hit and missing, that kind of thing.
How are you? I don't know if we've spoken about this. And by the way, it's something we did point out a year ago, or even longer than a year ago, for PK Subban to reach his absolute peak, and he's not there. One of the things he has to do, he has to stop averaging a penalty minute per game. He's got to bring it down, you know, let alone three figures, down to less than 80 minutes.
They're minor penalties.
It's yeah, that's like the thing.
Taking,
yeah,
not taking fives. You're getting. And so I don't mean to sound like I'm, you know, dumping on PK Subban, because I'm not. But, you know, he's not on the World Cup team.
Yeah, well, that's a whole other discussion.
If one of those defensemen on the world team got hurt, do you think he'd be the next one up?
After everything we've heard and knowing how Mike Babcock thinks, probably not.
Right.
But that doesn't...
If two got hurt, Would he be on the team?
You tell me.
I think Letang's ahead of him.
Yeah, I think we have disagreement, and Penguins fans, well, hardcore Penguins fans.
I'm not saying I'd put Letang on the team ahead of him. I'm saying that they would put Letang on the team ahead of him.
Yes, I know, and Penguins fans, by the way, who hardcore Pittsburgh Penguins fans, mm-hmm. That we've heard from, would prefer to have PK Subban over Chris Letang that we've heard from. Now, maybe there's a whole lot of Penguins fans out there that didn't weigh in a week or so ago, but
right.
But yeah. Anyway, it's very, very subjective. And
sure.
So one of the things I wanted to ask you, because in light of the Scott Cullen conversation, which came about as a result of Ray being on last week, kind of more than sniping at the analytics community for suggesting that in some areas Shea Weber is like a really bad player, right? How much weight do you put in analytics?
I would say... and to use an analytic, 10%. 10 to 15% of an evaluation of a player would be an analytic conversation. I think one of the problems with analytics is I'm not sure they've found a way yet to really measure the value of defensemen. And so the problem with analytics is if you follow them as your guide, you wind up with a lot of Tom Gilberts and Jakob Kindles on your team.
Or Rafael Diaz.
So there's no question, though, that, you know, that analytics can point you in a direction, certainly to avoid some bad contracts, for sure. You know, I mean, if a guy's a defensive defenseman, but his team is constantly getting caved in while he's on the ice, then what exactly is he defending?
Well, that's what they're saying about, for example, Chris Russell, who's still out there waiting for whatever domino to fall. And apparently the Canadians might be in there with Toronto and Vancouver and maybe Boston and a couple of other teams. And other people who see Chris Russell play without looking necessarily at the numbers saying he's a good player. He can help.
Yeah, and I think the other thing you have to keep in mind, too, is that the value of a player in a salary cap era is different than in an open era. So a 30-goal scorer who makes $7 million may not be as valuable as a 20-goal scorer who makes $4 million.
Mm-hmm. Once again, Scott Cullen from an hour ago.
Because there are GMs in the league who I'm sure place Weber above Subban, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt that if they really want to, you know, say that Weber is better today, that's fine. I think when you're evaluating the trade, I think you're crazy if you think that you're going to get more value from Shea Weber at age 31 through age 40 or however long he decides to play compared to what you're going to get out of PK Subban from age 27 to 32.
You're not crazy, are you, Gord?
No. Last I checked, I'm not. I think there's certainly a conversation to be had about that. The analytics community almost exclusively doesn't like this trade, and that's fair. They have an opinion. I think my point is, on a trade like this, you're not getting garbage back. You got a defenseman who is a game changer, who scored 20 goals last year, who has the best shot in the game, and who, you know, every player you talk about talks about the fact that he's a beast to play against. Now, is he as much of a beast as he was? Maybe not, but Shea Weber is a really good player.
Now,
you know. Now, Chris Pronger was a very effective NHL defenseman into his mid-30s until he got hurt.
Go ahead, Rod.
So, now, obviously, Weber will be a part of this conversation, Gord, but we see so often teams, especially losing teams, oscillate from year to year. They go from size and skill to grit and to toughness. And we kind of see the Canadians moving in that direction. Is that ultimately going to be seen as a mistake?
I wonder about that, especially up front sometimes. This is a game about skill. Now, getting the puck and getting it back is how you beat people now, right? It's very hard to beat people one-on-one. And so people that can pass the puck, get it back, and do something with it, especially at forward, are hard to find. I wonder about... You know, and I wonder about Edmondson getting bigger and tougher in a league that seems to be getting more skilled. So, yeah, I think it's a, you know, I want skill on my team. And I think Shea Weber is a very skilled player, as I think Subban's a very skilled player as well. I want skilled defensemen. I think we've talked about this before, guys, that if you look at the most overpaid players in the league, they are generally defensive defensemen. You know, Mitch, you and I had a conversation on the air. I remember it, you know, God, it's going to be 5-6 years ago now, about Mike Komisarek.
Right.
And saying that you know, you can replace a guy that blocks shots, and they end up with Hal Gill, who turned out to be a perfectly reasonable replacement for him, for a lot less money. You can replace shot blockers and defenders. It's very hard to replace guys that can score goals from the back end or make plays in the front end. Very hard to find those guys.
It's almost as if we're seeing a phasing, if not phasing out necessarily, but certainly pushing them down into the 5 and 6 holes on a
for sure,
right?
And certainly, and not just pulled down to the 5-6 hole, Mitch, but also in terms of the money they're making, getting pushed way down the salary scale.
You know, and the other thing I guess we haven't mentioned, of course, Jonathan Toews, Gord, had the tweet as soon as the trade happened that he was happy that Shea Weber was leaving the division, and we know that you talked to a lot of the players. How do you think the players on the team, specifically playing in the Montreal Canadiens division, feel about the trade that the Canadiens made?
I've talked to a few. I think that, you know, I don't think PK is a guy you talk about before the game in terms of, hey, watch out for this guy. And Shea Weber, to an extent, is. For two reasons. Number one, defending his shot is something that every team has to figure out how to do. Because it's hard, it's low, and it hurts people. And it gets tipped and it bounces around. So talking about defending his shot is one thing teams have to do. But he's also a player you have to be aware where he is at all times. And there's only a few defensemen like that. Pronger was like that. You always had to know where Pronger was. You always had to know where Scott Stevens was. Because they'll hurt you if you're not aware.
With Gord Miller on Melnick in the afternoon on TSN 690. While we were chatting, Mark Scheifele has signed a new contract with the Winnipeg Jets. Apparently 8 years, $49 million.
Okay, so 6 and change, huh?
Yep.
Yeah, they're an interesting team. You know, what intrigues me about Winnipeg is that they're all in on Dustin Byfuglien. And he is another player who's really polarizing because there are players in the league and coaches who talk about him being, you can't say the most unique, but, you know, the most unusual package of talent in the NHL, the combination of all the skills he brings. And there are others who say he's just too much of a wild card and you can't win with him. So they've built a pretty decent core there, but the core includes Byfuglien. And I'll be intrigued to see, because at his best, Dustin Byfuglien is unquestionably a game-changing player, but another guy who takes a ton of bad penalties.
Right. And the other hockey development today, it's kind of a delayed trade of goaltenders with Jonathan Bernier being shipped to Anaheim. They had, of course, acquired Frederick Anderson, so Bernier's reunited with Randy Carlyle. Dave Nonis is in that front office, I do believe, right?
Yeah, and so interesting there. What's funny about, you know, you talk about the change in the game, the goaltender under 6 feet tall is an endangered species. And I saw a note from the Elias Sports Bureau last year when Jonathan Bernier started against Jonas Enroth. It was only the fourth time that season, that was midway through the year, that two goaltenders under 6 foot tall had faced each other as starters. Whereas 5 years ago, it happened like 300 times. So I'll be intrigued to see, like with Bernier, if he can get it back. The other thing that's going to happen this year, and I hate to sound like Pierre Maguire here, but the goalie equipment's going to get smaller. So it's going to be more about athleticism and less about blocking. You can't be a Michelin man out there anymore. You're going to have to be a goaltender. And let's see who can really play goal and who is just blocking with big gear.
Barb on Twitter wants to know if you would rank Carey Price among the top 15 goalies in the NHL.
Yes, I would. Barb? Yes, Barb, I would. I would put Carey Price in the top 1.5.
Go ahead, Ron.
What about what we saw on July 1st as a whole, Gord, with the amount of money given out? At the same time, we didn't see as many no move and no trades. Instead, we kind of saw the signing bonuses explode. Just a general reaction to the dollars that were handed out.
So it's just like this endless game of whack-a-mole, right? So they have a work stoppage. They come up with this new CBA, and then in anticipation of the next one, the team starts signing lockout-proof contracts. Bob McKenzie sent a chill down our spine when he talked about, you know, the possibility of the CBA being expiring in 2020 or 2021. So now it's all signing bonus in the first few years, and then in 2021, no salary to get around losing money in the lockout. I guess the next thing will be that only half a contract can be in signing bonus. That's why David Clarkson couldn't be bought out, there was no money to buy out. It's all signing bonus. So the Leafs were sort of the leading edge on that movement. These long deals seldom turn out at the end, especially now that you can't put those, you know, caboose years on them where, you know, a player is making $1 million just to bring the average annual value down. But when you're paying guys, you know, $7 million in the seventh year of a deal, how often does that turn out to be a good idea? And it remains to be seen. And now you're married to it. You won't be able to buy it out. You cannot buy yourself out of it because so much of it is signing bonus. The Canucks have Louis Erickson for 6 years, and they really have very little wiggle room to buy themselves out of it.
And talking about bonuses, what's going on, Gord, with the Leafs and Austin Matthews and Lamoriello? Like, why is he playing hardball with the kid they drafted first overall?
Well, you'd have to ask him that. But if you go by history, Lou Lamoriello does not give out what's called the Schedule B bonuses. So every rookie qualifies for sort of standard bonuses, Schedule A, and then Schedule B is a little more individual. And if a player makes that, then he can earn up, you know, $3.75 million as a rookie. And Lou has never given those out.
Has he ever? I'm sorry. Has he ever fired a PA announcer before? Do you know?
I don't know that. I know that he, you know, he doesn't allow the announcers on the charter. So New Jersey was the only team that didn't, and now Toronto is. I don't know what happened with Andy Frost. Strange. I mean, it's always something. Like, what other city would people talk about the PA announcer? Like, honestly.
Well, here in Montreal, when we, you know, Michel Lacroix is as great as it gets, and Claude Moutin
really
was as good as it gets.
By the way, Michel, he's a great, I mean, in addition to being the Canadiens announcer, he's a terrific, terrific announcer, by the way. But, yeah, I don't know what happened with Andy.
All right.
I mean, how does a PA announcer get fired? Like, I mean,
good question. All right, we've got to wrap this up. Let's go back to where you started.
But the end feels nigh. He serves out wide. The backhand return is good. Raonic with the forehand. Yes. Federer goes wide. And Raonic, with barely a flicker, is into the Wimbledon final.
As heard live here on TSN 690 earlier today, we're going to Wimbledon in 10 minutes. Tom Tebbit on site will join us. I'm curious. I, you know, it's a great moment for tennis in Canada for obvious reasons. While you were watching, did you find yourself or feel yourself at any point actually rooting for Federer?
I hate to say this, but I rarely cheer for people in a sporting event. Really happy for Milos Raonic, obviously. I think that Federer's had a great career, and I don't think that this defines him. He made the semifinals of Wimbledon. I think it's a great breakthrough for Milos Raonic. And he, you know, he deserves it. He's worked so hard for it and put up with so much and really has changed his game a little bit. It's a great moment for him. And by the way, Denis Shapovalov of Canada is in the boys' singles final
right.
as well.
Yep.
So that's a big, you know, this country's producing some good tennis players. And certainly to see, you know, Raonic and in lesser extent, you know, Jeannie Bouchard at times and others come forward is great. And I'm really happy for Raonic. Tough final match for him.
And you're a soccer guy. Here we go on Sunday. Here's Gord Miller's call. By the way, our hamster who's been making picks finished dead last of all our personalities here on TSN 690. We don't have to play it out on Sunday. We know Terry the hamster is being taken out and euthanized.
Hey.
Well, that's, you know, it's useless.
By the way, a hamster went missing in my house last year. If anyone's seen it, let me know.
what's your call on Sunday?
I don't think Buttercup met a good end.
Poor Buttercup.
What's my call?
Yeah.
I don't like to make predictions.
I know you don't, but it's France. They're at home.
Yeah, I mean, that's the easy one, right? I'll tell you what. I said to someone the other day, if you only watched Cristiano Ronaldo the other day, you saw the game.
Right.
Like if you only focused on him, you saw the game. That's
and it's headed away by Chester, but only out to Ronaldo, who shoots low, and it's deflected in by Nani. And it's 2-0. Wales conceding two goals in the space of 3 minutes.
Yeah, you were cheering for Wales, though, weren't you?
No.
Okay, I thought maybe you had.
No,
some.
I want, to be honest, I mean, to the limited extent I cheer, I do want to see the best in the final.
Well, you
I mean,
got
Wales
that.
And Iceland were great stories. I think it'll be a fabulous match on Sunday. I do. I give the edge to France, but I think a fabulous match. It should be great. And I think, you know, one of the great scenes I ever witnessed was being in Paris when France won the World Cup in 1998 and seeing that scene on the Champs-Élysées. One of the most remarkable evenings in sport I've ever had. And this won't likely be to that level, but it'll still be something.
Great talking to you these last several months, Gord, on a weekly basis. I know our listeners enjoyed it. Let's see if you can start trending.
Well,
I mean, you could keep coming on. I won't be here most of the summer, but you
know. What do you
do? Well, I'm just going to kind of chill. Yeah, I'm going to. As opposed to
what? What you're doing now?
I'll be going to Cape Cod in August. I like to swim in the ocean. I like to dart through the shark path, live dangerously, that kind of thing.
That's you. I think of you, Mitch. I think of a guy who throws caution to the wind. That's what I think of. Don't wear the German marble bag down there, okay? That's not a cool thing to do.
Have a great summer.
You too, guys.
Thank you very much. Royal Wood, taking us to Gallo's Update, and then we'll come back and go to Wimbledon.
Did you know that the only way to recharge your body and mind after a long day